Thanks for listening to the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Listening to Fox Sports Radio.
What up, Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Hope you're having a good day. Doug Gottlieb Show broadcasting live and direct from sunny Southern California. Sun has returned. Happy Halloween to you. Love Halloween. Can I point out one thing I don't like about Halloween? I hate scary movies. I don't like scary movies. Like Scream was over the top and scared the pee out of me. And I know scary movie guys like, dude, Scream, come on, bro. Like, bro. Sound like Joe Beningo, of course, retiring at WFAN. He's a big bro guy, bro. But I just think of horror movie guys, bro, that's not even like a scary movie. It's like nothing. It's like nothing. Like The Purge, like that's a movie I can get down with. Like, that scares the crap out of me. That one scares the crap out of me. Is there one called Safe Room or something like that?
There is a Safe Room movie, yes.
Yes.
That's the one with Jodie Foster.
Yes. You know, the Halloween, they used to have Halloween on, when I was a kid, I had HBO. I didn't have my parents on HBO. And they used to play Halloween every year on HBO. And I think it was Halloween 3 had like the snakes or something coming out of the eyes of like the pumpkin or something like that.
And the worst of the Halloween movies, by the way.
It was the worst?
Yeah, Season of the Witch, Halloween 3.
I was scared. I slept in my parents' bed for like a month after that. I don't like scary movies. Can I share with you my logic as to why? Okay. There's all different sensual experiences you get to feel as a human being. You get to laugh. You should laugh. You should love. You should hate. Anger, right? And there's fear. Comfort, I think. Hunger. And then when you feed that hunger, like these are all like feelings and emotions and not just the senses that you have. I think there's enough fear in this world where I don't need to add to that and play to that portion of my brain. Whereas I don't think there's enough laughter in this world. There's enough love and joy in this world. And so I prefer movies that take me to those places as opposed to one that I got enough fear in my life. Like I have three children. I have a job and a contract and we're in curious to like, I got enough fear as to what my life could possibly look like if something went wrong. Right. And most of my fear is reasonable. And I get that horror movies, it's not like you walk in and you think you're going to watch a comedy and all of a sudden dudes are getting their heads cut off. But I think we got enough scary stuff in this world. I don't think we have enough laughter. That's my working philosophy. All right. Last week, Baker Mayfield led the Browns on a comeback against the Bengals. He threw 5 touchdown passes. In the first quarter, he couldn't have been worse. 0 for 5, threw a pick. There's been a lot of discussion about the Browns and if they're better off without OBJ. This is a 3-week stretch that Baker has in front of him. Right? They're 5-2 on the season. The overall defensive ranking of the Bengals is 26th, and that may be a bit too high. I know statistically they're 26th, but look at the last 2 weeks, and they got completely lit up. Right? Completely lit up by the Cleveland Browns. The week before that, they had a 3-touchdown lead against the Indianapolis Colts, and Phillip Rivers, who looked like he couldn't throw a football the week before, just dismantled it. So I think Cincinnati's defense stinks. It stunk for 2 years. Why would it be so much better now? And they just got rid of Carlos Dunlap, and who knows who else is going to be traded. This Sunday, they take on the Las Vegas Raiders. The Raiders have not fixed their defense through all of these moves. They're 31st in overall defense. That's who the Bengals play. Then the Bengals play the Texans. Excuse me, the Bengals, the Browns. The Browns play the Bengals, the Browns play the Raiders, the Browns play the Texans. They already beat the Bengals. This is a big 3-week stretch for Baker Mayfield. Can he play? Yeah. Can he play at a playoff level? I don't know. Can they make the playoffs? Sure. But you got to beat the teams that you're substantially better than, and he's got to light up the defenses that are the worst that he plays against. He doesn't have to be great against the Ravens in order for them to get to the playoffs. But he needs to be really, really good against the bottom feeders, the bottom defense in the NFL. This is a great opportunity for Baker to show you. Hugh Jackson just joins. He's like, man, I think he's better out of the shotgun. Just get it, get rid of it quick, you know, pick and stick. That's exactly what they're able to do. Now, you can do those against the bad defenses. You can't do it against the really, really good ones. And he'll play really good ones at the end of the year. They're not playing them right now. If I'm Baker Mayfield, I'm maybe even putting a little pressure on myself because I feel like this is a time in which I can take complete control of the huddle. Even if everybody, like I talked to an NFL executive, he's like, this is the Bengals. You're able to do things against the Bengals. You can't do against the best teams. Same thing with the Raiders. Same thing with the Texans. It is show me time for Baker Mayfield, and he can solidify himself. Because I don't think he has a GM and a head coach that did not draft him. There is no tie to him at all in that organization. Big couple week stretch for Baker Mayfield. Doug Gottlieb show here on Fox Sports Radio. John Middlecoff is going to join us in 15 minutes. Former NFL scout, 3 and Out podcast. By the way, I have a new All Ball podcast out. My man Phil Hickey. Phil did the marketing for Angry Birds, the big 6'10", 6'11", 260-some-odd pound center out of Wellsboro, Pennsylvania. Played with him in Notre Dame. Incredible guy. Really bright. His personal story is a pretty good one. Download the All Ball podcast. Coming up next, we're officially going to see the debut of Tua Tagovailoa in the NFL. What are realistic expectations for the Dolphins' new quarterback against the Rams? I'll tell you next, but first,
be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
So we're going to see Tua on Sunday. The Dolphins made the surprising move after 2 weeks ago. Really, Ryan Fitzpatrick played well. Tua threw a couple passes, soaked in the atmosphere afterwards, called his family on FaceTime, and, you know, next thing we know, he's a starting quarterback. I think he's going to play well. You know, I mean, now, my fear is that you don't have to be the greatest athlete to be a quarterback. Tom Brady is not a particularly good athlete. Phillip Rivers is a terrible athlete. He's been really successful. And Tua is a better athlete than both of them. But you have to know who you are and know what you're capable of. And that's really the question with Tua. Does he know that he's not capable of outrunning people, especially NFL speed? Because that's when he's been hurt. But I think he'll be good in his debut. He was good in his debut with Alabama. He was pretty good last week. I think you got a whole week to prepare. The Rams are playing on a short week. Couldn't set up any better for them. And oh yeah, by the way, you know you can get Jalen Ramsey on double moves, right? Like Ramos and I both know that. I think there's no doubt Tua knows that as well. I think it'll be all right. It'll be fine. Yeah, and it's not just a keeping up with the Joneses. Well, Joe Burrow is good, and you know you look, Justin Herbert's good, so he'll be good. No, Tua's good. No one has ever said they thought Tua wasn't going to be good. Their question is, could he be healthy? Could he be healthy? So I think he'll be, I don't know if he'll be outstanding this week. The Rams defense is not great, and their defensive backfield can be really shaky. Ramsey's been good against the run. He has not been so good against, you know, deep passing game. He sits on routes. Well, you don't think they don't watch tape? Guy supposedly has a brilliant football mind. I'm with it. I think it'll be good. And, you know, it's not just the 2 weeks prepare. It's the fact that the Rams have a short week prepare, and the Rams have to travel all the way out there. That's a beast of a trip. Think about it. You know, you play Monday night, Tuesday off. Wednesday you start to put in kind of your game plan, you know. But there's limitations to how much you can do and what you can do because of COVID. And then you're flying out today. And then a quick turnaround. Whereas the Dolphins, they might have been off last week, but they can put in and talk to their quarterback and find a way to get him so that when they started putting in their game plan, and then they could watch Monday night and continue. And then Friday, they're practicing when the Rams are flying. They'll be good. They'll be good, 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 good to go. Did you guys see this? It's interesting. What I like what Steve Nash is doing with his staff in the NBA. If you're just joining us, Mike D'Antoni is going to essentially be the offensive coordinator, right? D'Antoni coached Steve Nash. He's getting the old Suns back together. He's got Amari Stoudemire on his staff as well. And then, you know, Jacque Vaughn is going to stay and be, I believe, the highest paid assistant in the league. He's going to be like his Ty Lue. He's been a head coach before. He was the interim coach of the Nets. All that makes sense. Bring some continuity. You bring Ime Udoka in, who's a former player and is very close to being a head coach. Of course, he's a Spur guy. Jock's a Spurs guy. You know, Sean Marks, the general manager, is a Spurs guy as well. So you bring in an offensive style that everybody likes. I don't know if it works, though. I think it works with Kyrie some, but man, he likes to dribble the hell out of the ball, and that hasn't seemed to bother D'Antoni when he had James Harden. But there's a lot of screen roll action, and that's not really how KD plays. KD's more of an ISO guy, but we'll see how that works. I like, though, the idea of just get a staff of, you know, get a staff that's really, really impressive when your coaching resume isn't as impressive because you don't have one. Your coaching resume is your playing resume. Let's get you to Dan Beyer before. Go ahead, Ramos.
I got a quick question. I wonder what it's like to be a head coach and then be an assistant coach. Like to be, like for D'Antoni. Like,
could ask Hugh Jackson. He's done it a couple times.
Yeah, I mean, if you were the head coach of like teams for many years and you still felt like you had it, and then you become the assistant coach of somebody else who's never coached before. I mean, they have a relationship, so I understand that part is good. But it's just like, I would just think like, wouldn't it feel like a demotion to you?
It is a demotion.
No,
but
I know.
It's a promotion above being fired.
Yeah. I've been having no job at all, right?
Yeah, I mean, do I get it? Yes. Like, it's very, very different. Very, very different. I think, you know, so in the NBA, you know, you have three guys in front of the bench. So you think about it, you're Steve Nash, and you've played and have seen a ton of things. You have your own opinions. Then you have Jacque Vaughn, who's played and seen a bunch of things, and he's been also been a bench player with the Spurs teams as well, which I do think gives you a different perspective, and been a coach. And then you have D'Antoni, who played and then has been a head coach and has seen just about everything, right? And then probably Ime Udoka. That's their front of the bench staff. That's a strong staff. Strong. Now, the one thing they don't, you know, they don't have guys that have been lifer assistants. Vaughn has been an assistant, but he's also been a head coach. But he's been a head coach and gone back to being an assistant. But I know what you're saying. Like, D'Antoni hasn't been an assistant in a long. I don't think he's ever been an assistant coach.
And I think we talked about earlier in the season, I think Jason Kidd did a wonderful job of becoming an assistant coach. I never felt during the season, as we talked about before the season with the Lakers, how he's ready to take over when Vogel doesn't do well. I never felt during the whole season that Jason Kidd was ready to take over. I felt he did a wonderful job as being an assistant coach, even though he had been a head coach for many years.
Right. I think the hardest thing in talking to people is it's not that you don't get to share your opinion. It's that your opinion isn't the actual law, right? Like when you're a head coach and you're like, all right, I came to this kind of opinion in my mind, that's what you go with. Whereas you can give your opinion, it doesn't mean they're going to do it. And the rhythms of everything else are very different. You know, do you have shoot around? Do you not have shoot around? They can ask your opinion again. It's not your choice. Where you sit, how much you talk, don't stand in front of the team. It's very different.
I mean, when you were the head coach for the Israeli team and also...
But I hadn't been, you know, like I have, my assistant was a guy named Jake Rauschbach, who's been an assistant in Israel as well. And he's a mental mind coach. Like we coached our first game and he was like, well, you're just going to walk up and down the sidelines and kneel on the sidelines the whole game? I was like, yeah, I don't, you know, if you want to talk to me, you're going to have to come out here. I don't sit down. It's like, why? I was like, I don't know. I see better from right here. I see everything better. I feel everything better. That's how I roll. So that's how I roll. Kind of cool thing tonight. I'm coaching my nephew and my son. They're going to play in the same game in like a little AU game tonight. That'd be fun. Super fun.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Let's welcome in John Middlecoff, former NFL scout. Of course, 3 and Out is, in fact, the podcast. Stephon Gilmore is tweaked his knee. He's tweaked his knee. Now you got Edelman's out. N'Keal Harry's out. I would guess Stephon Gilmore doesn't play. By the way, in the easiest picks of the year, give me the Buffalo Bills and the points, but who remains in New England after Tuesday's trade deadline?
Uh, Well, I mean, I think Edelman is legitimately hurt. I don't know if he's really tradable. To me, Gilmore, there's going to be a lot of work. I'm sure there's being work done on him right now. Like, he would be a guy people are going to trade for. He's one of the best corners in the league the last 4 or 5 years. I mean, he's an elite player. Now, to me, the question with him is he's 30 years old. I thought Peter Schrager did a thing the last, I think, 6 or 7 players that have been traded for, like, that first-round pick. You know, the Ramseys, the Diggs, the Jamal Adams have all been 27 or under. So, you know, it gets a little complicated there. But to me, the move is to trade him. You know, I guess Thuney, but he's banged up, the guard. The Patriots, I was watching them play last week against the Niners. They're not exactly, loaded with players. I mean, they only have a small handful of guys to me that have any value. So are they just keeping Gilmore out this week to trade him next week? Is this something he's doing? He doesn't want to get traded. I don't know. It's hard to – the one thing New England does a good job of is not much comes out of there. I don't think anyone really knows.
Cam Newton, is he a shot fighter? I mean, like, is he done?
I thought last week was one of the worst football games you'll ever see, like, a highly famous guy play. You know, I mean, we've seen that game out of just scrubs, and there's a chance maybe he's just a scrub now, because that game against Seattle sure looks like an outlier. I mean, he couldn't complete basic passes. I'm talking, like, 5 yard outs. He was skipping the ball. I mean, it was
John. Listen,
it was atrocious.
I tell people for the last year, you know, like, I have 2 or 3 people. One's a director of player personnel. One's a GM. Another's a player personnel guy at another team. And all three of them said the exact same thing. Like, did you see him throw before he shut it down last year? Like, he can't throw anymore. And then early this year, like, yeah, still, it's like the once you get to the volume of throws, you get to the middle of the end of the season, starts getting exposed. Like, you can early on, like, first 4 weeks doesn't really mean anything. It looks like his arm is shot, because he's never had great fundamentals. And when you're trying to rebuild your shoulder, you got to have really good fundamentals. And now it's like the opposite of that: bad fundamentals and bad arm.
Yeah, you know, you and I have talked about this before. People are less worried about the foot; they were worried about the shoulder. And that's just talking to people in the league that don't even need a quarterback, but just, you know, they're locked into the rumor mill and what the vibe is on every player. I got that from multiple, like, high-ranking executives. They're like, yeah, we don't trust the shoulder. And, I mean, neither did Belichick. He didn't give him any money, you know. But I also think it shows you that the Patriots were going to be in a world of hurt no matter what,
yes,
right? Because they're Stidham stinks, Hoyer's worse, and if Cam shot, I mean, you can't – when you don't have any talent and then your quarterback sucks – I think Belichick's, in my opinion, might be one of the greatest coaches any sport ever.
Yes,
but it doesn't matter, right?
You get, well, they had eight guys. They got 8 guys opt out too, right? You had Patrick Chung and Dante.
Didn't they lead the league?
Yes,
their entire defense.
Yeah, it's literally the only thing they're leading the league in is guys who opted out.
And like, you know, the one criticism of Bill is he has missed the last 2 or 3 years on several picks. Now, my pushback always is, they went to 8 straight AFC championships, and even last year they lost in the first round of the playoffs. They're not just picking at the end of the first round. They're picking at the end of every round. You know, they haven't been in the teens as a drafting team, or definitely traded up in the draft in forever. Now, if you want to say he should have been more aggressive, that's fine, but it didn't. They didn't need to, because they kept on winning.
Has Baker turned a corner, or is it, hey, they're going against the Bengals, you can snap it, pick a spot, stick it, and throw the football? Are you buying Baker's transformation after OBJ gets hurt?
Yeah, I'm not buying it after one game. Now, if he does this for 4 or 5 games, yeah. I mean, maybe there is something with Odell, and he kind of has this, I don't know, like Terrell Owens mid-2000s vibe that's probably accomplished a little bit less, but he's more famous than he is talented. I think in the last, like, 3 or 4 years, he has like 16 touchdowns. I think his first 3 years it was in the mid-30s. So, I mean, it's a precipitous fall of production, but his fame has grown. This week, the Raiders, I mean, not quite as bad as Cincinnati defensively, but they're pretty bad. So
their overall defensive rating is worse, 31st worst.
Yeah, you got the stats. I mean, they don't pass the eye test.
No, look,
it could be another good game for Baker.
Yeah, look, I think this one, and then they play somebody crummy the following week as well, like Houston. So, I mean, he's got a chance to look better than he actually is these next couple weeks.
I do think on that Browns-Raider game, John Gruden got a lot of money to come out of retirement. It's one thing to lose to Tom Brady, right, or just some of these games over the years, been rebuilding the team. Like, year three, midseason, like, you got to beat Kevin Stefanski. You know, this is a game that John Gruden, eventually we got to start judging some wins and losses. You know, you beat the Chiefs, you can't just then drop three straight games. I mean, yeah. You got to – this is a big week for Gruden, you know, against Stefanski.
You ever seen anything like DK – why did people miss on DK Metcalf? They think he was David Boston?
I remember texting people after he ran like that 4.25, and was like, bro, who is it? Is this guy going in the top 10? He had a bunch of injuries in college, and I just think the production, like, it was just so hit or miss at Ole Miss. Because think about it, his teammate, every time I look up, is making plays too, AJ Brown. I mean, how did both those guys
expensive team
be
dude.
Lock what like top 15 picks?
I mean, look, there's a reason they got on probation. They were buying good players. The guy who couldn't play was Ngakoue, right? Not Ngakoue. What was the Kimdiche?
Yeah, the guy that got in a bunch of trouble with Arizona.
Yeah, Kimdiche. Yeah, he couldn't play.
All the
didn't
other
like
guys
football.
Are like Pro Bowlers.
Yes.
I think one thing you see with DK, and I think this rings true, just definitely in basketball and football, the fit and the teammates you're around impact your life dramatically.
Sure.
I mean, he is a elite deep ball receiver, and he's with the greatest deep ball quarterback ever, and a place that has really promoted him, supported him, and he clearly works really hard. Russ loves him. I mean, it's just every time the guy prays, you should thank God that he ended up there.
You know, it's funny you point that out. You're a big Warriors guy, and I was talking to a member of the Warriors front office like a week ago, and he said he's like, you know, who do you like for our pick? And we started talking about guys. I said, look, whoever you pick, I mean, as long as they're okay not playing much early on, it's one, he has to fit your culture. But if he fits your culture, like, that's the greatest thing ever. You don't have to carry a team. You can learn to play real basketball. You have guys with unbelievable work ethic who are going to compete for a championship, are going to get to play deep in the playoffs. He's like, well, thank you. I agree with you. I was like, yeah. So you can't take a player who is sole concern is, how many points am I going to score my first couple years in the league? Because they're not going to score many, because that's who you got Steph and Clay specifically for, and maybe some others for as well. So fit is everything.
To me, when you have that culture, it's why you can take bigger swings. Like, so if they think Wiseman has the highest upside, you go, you got the culture to raise those guys. When they took DK Metcalf, I think most of us were like, you know, this guy's huge. You go to YouTube, he's got some sweet highlights, but what's the deal? Because every team passed on the guy twice, right? Like, this seems a little too good to be true, and you can't watch him to go, it's just, the guy's a star, you know? The irony, Doug, the guy that leads the league in touchdowns is on his team is Tyler Lockett. You know,
another guy people missed on, though.
That guy's pretty good, too.
Right, and he was too little out of K-State. Right? Was he K-State? Yeah, it was K-State, right?
Yeah, he's K-State. K-State.
Yeah, and they ran the ball a ton when he was there as well. So the numbers maybe, but he was great in return game. He was awesome there.
He's a stud.
Okay, so help me out here. Lamar getting exposed? Are they working through something with him? Like, what's happened to the Ravens passing game?
Well, I just think they were used to last year just being up and boat racing people. And the more the run scheme is like a pass game, if you have a dominant wide receiver or passing game, it's really hard to stop. Because at the end of the day, the quarterback and the coordinator dictate. To me, the run scheme, especially when you do what they do, which is it's a variation of what the Niners did years ago. They've obviously added elements to it. It eventually slows down. You can't slam it down everyone's throat just based on scheme. Now, you can kick people's butt when you got Barry Sanders or Walter Payton or an all-time great guy. But if it's just based on scheme, you have to be multiple in what you do. But the key to it is having a pass threat. And right now, clearly, they don't think they're taking away the middle shots and making them beat him outside the numbers. And that's not really his thing. That doesn't mean he's not a good player or whatever, but like, there's a reason you can't slow down Patrick Mahomes or Rodgers or Russell Wilson, because they can hit every throw. Like, the defenses, and this week, I'm fascinated for this game.
Me too.
That defense, you saw that team. I know the score was closer, but that first half, when Pittsburgh comes to play, I mean, you could argue, like, I'd be fascinated to watch Chiefs against them. I mean, they bring it. So you're not going to run it on them, right?
I don't know, though, if the Chiefs match up with it. I think it's one of those where I think the Steelers are better against more teams. But I think the Chiefs game plan would be, remember when the Patriots used to play Pittsburgh? And they would go in there, and they would just go five wide. They'd empty, and they just mismatch, just dink and dunk you to death. They'd get one of those linebackers out into coverage, and it would be really, really ugly. I think that's what the Chiefs do. The Ravens, now I'm interested, because they have to establish the run and play action in order to get to some of those deep shots. And I don't know if they'll get there.
Think about it, Doug. The Titans, it doesn't look the same.
Yeah.
They don't run like the option and stuff, but it's the same mentality. Run it down your throat.
It is different. 11-on-11 is different. 11-on-11 is different, though, right? When the quarterback runs, it changes the math completely.
Well, I'm interested to see the team speed of Pittsburgh is fantastic.
Yeah.
If Lamar is attempting to run, how they, like, is he running for 20 yards or does he get 70 yards? Because we see when he... when he can get, like, to me, over that 50-60 threshold where he gets three or four runs,
yeah,
he creates some first downs,
yeah,
it does – they're able to take a deep breath and kind of establish their offense. I don't think he can do that this week.
Other one that really intrigues me is Saints at Bears. Twofold. One, like, this Michael Thomas thing, he's still not playing. I heard the nickname in the building is Can't Stand Mike. Like – did they pay a turd? Did they pay a turd? Is that what happened? I never heard that he was he's a wide receiver, but I never heard that he was this kind of dude. And now they can't get him on the field. And then you add in Breeze, outdoors, cold weather, good defense, and it's windy. I'm in.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be tough without Can't Stand Mike. that's a good one. You know what? The one thing I was always told to ask. And you've heard this a million times with scouting and coaching, and you never really know. You can ask the question to a million people and get the answer is, how's he going to respond to money?
Yeah.
And remember, Michael Thomas was not a top 10 pick.
No.
He didn't get big, big money till that contract was signed. And then it'd be like Khalil Mack, when he got his $90 million contract, he did sign like a $28 million contract when he was the fifth overall pick.
Right.
So it was a lot more money, but he'd seen millions. Some of these guys, when you're not a super high pick in the second round, even though you become famous while you're on that young contract, we think, oh, this guy's a baller, he's a star. He's really not making the money that he's going to make once he signs the big boy contract.
Yeah.
And sometimes guys just – one thing I read or heard, he like undressed Sean Payton at a practice, and that's where it's just like you start losing your teammates when you do stuff like that. And we heard it forever with Antonio Brown. Once you pay him, he's going to stop listening. Now, I don't know this guy. It doesn't feel like he's that malicious or anything, but it's clearly – it's derailed right now. I mean, is this guy not going to play – if you told me he doesn't play another game the rest of the season, you know, it's a Terrell Owens situation, they spin, I'll believe anything at this point because it's getting really weird. And, yeah, I don't like the Saints. Now, the Bears offense, my guy Nagy, I love him, but, God, their offense is hard to watch.
I love him too. Do you think I think Foles actually said it to Greasy, and I think Greasy should have put it like in his own words, and that's where Greasy screwed it up.
Yeah, what I think the problem is I think Foles, I think it's hard to call as an offensive play caller, especially when you like the pass. You know, he's a quarterback at heart, not an offensive lineman. The one thing you have to realize, and I think it's hard, and I've seen it with Coach Reed before, not their offensive line is good now, but you just like discount your offense. Their offensive line stinks. I mean, it's probably bottom five in the league, especially the interior. I mean, they give up so much pressure. Foles is not an athlete. I mean, he is an athlete, but he's slow-footed, so
yes,
he can't avoid,
yeah, yeah,
you know, the rush. So he's kind of a sitting duck. It is just – Foles can't play behind a bad offensive line. Remember the Eagles offensive line that he won Super Bowl with? Lane Johnson, Jason Peters, Kelsey, the dude that tore his Achilles, I forget his name, but the right guard's an all-pro. Like they have a really good offensive line. That ain't – the Chicago Bears are awful.
Good stuff, man. Expectations of Tua?
I would say if he can just throw a touchdown against, you know, a really good team, that'd be pretty good. I'm not expecting much week one. I'm not going to judge him on this week.
No. I think they'll get Jalen Ramsey on a double move. That's for sure.
Yeah. To me, I think the big thing is we've eye tested the other guys because they're not winning that much either, and they passed the eye test. So this guy, after he starts a couple games, we go, okay, that guy looks like he's got a shot. Or we're like, whoa, he looks a little overwhelmed. I'm not confident. I'd probably bet it's going to be tough for him. But
if you were going to pick one right now, who would you pick?
Herbert.
Yeah, me too. Stud. Stud.
But it's close. I mean, Burrow's damn good too.
No, he is.
I'm a sucker for a big arm. That's why. If you pick Burrow, I wouldn't argue with you.
Yep. Good stuff, John. Thanks for joining us.
See See you.
John Middlecoff, Three and Outs, the podcast, former NFL scout, great dude. Should Cowboys fans be rooting for a loss against the Eagles?
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Every day this time of the Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio, we get you updated on the stories of the day. We call something we heard earlier today. We call it...
And now...
What does the Fox say?
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. So, look, there's a lot of different topics going on in the National Football League. Trying to figure out exactly... what the most interesting is, take a listen to this.
Arguing with Colt fans when I used to take phone calls. Lose to get Andrew Luck. You cannot as a fan. Yes, you can. You want to get your next Peyton Manning. This is obvious, right? And I've always said fans are 50-50. 50% of fans you would not want to bump into at a rest area. Like they're just not, you know, they're just breathing, walking, talking, chewing gum. They can't do it. And there's a 50% of fans that are just, you know, they get the bigger picture. There were fans in Cleveland. I argued with them. I mean, that when I used to take calls, you can't lose to get LeBron. I'm like, yes, you can. Like there are these, you know, there are these unique players. And so Dallas does not need a quarterback. They're going to go with Dak going forward. But John Goulet and I, we talked about this earlier. If I'm Dallas, the worst thing you can do this weekend is win with a backup. And Jerry Jones thinks, how about them Cowboys? No. You want Dallas to go out and get absolutely boat raced and humiliated, and it's against a rival.
Yeah, you don't ever want that. You don't ever want that. Like, I understand what Colin is saying. He's saying, like, tear down the team, tear down the season, start over. And maybe that's what they do, but I don't... That's not what the Cowboys need. The Cowboys traded or cut three starters on the defensive side of the ball. What they need this weekend is great effort. They need what DK Metcalf did in Arizona to Buda Baker. That's the type of effort that they need on every play. Find guys that want to play hard. Win or lose it doesn't actually matter. But they're definitely not cheering for a loss. They are rooting to see what their culture is like. Like, look, no one pick or two picks in the draft are going to change the Cowboys next year. The Cowboys next year should have most of their offensive line back. They got to figure out the center position. They'll have Dak Prescott back as a quarterback, probably on a long-term contract. They'll have Ezekiel Elliott as their running back. They'll have Amari Cooper as their wide receiver. You know, like other things can be filled in. They need to fill in their defense. They're never going to be the worst team in that division. The Giants and the Washington football team have the market cornered on that one. There's just not enough talent there to beat teams outside the division. You're playing the Eagles. What they need this weekend is Eagle week level effort. That's what they need first and foremost. On November 6th and 7th, the world's best thoroughbreds will compete in 14 exhilarating races worth $31 million in purses and awards at the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Learn more about the Breeders' Cup at breederscup.com/2020. Buyer, your favorite candy is what?
Halloween candy?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, because there's... I like a good old Heath bar, you know, small Heath bar. I like toffee.
It's good.
That way.
It is good. It's good. What about you, Ramos?
Wow, my favorite candy or bar is a Three Musketeers.
Sure.
But I also do like the Crunch bar. The Crunch. I like the
little Crunch.
Yeah, I like a Crunch.
Yeah, that's good. That's good stuff. Three Musketeers is really good frozen as well. You ever do that?
I have. It is delicious, yes. Yeah, so I like all my candy cold, by the way.
Yes. I don't think anybody.
No, some people like it not cold.
I microwave my Twix.
That's not bad. It melts. If you put it on top of like ice cream and stuff, right? A little warm. That's not bad. Not bad. Sweet tarts are something that I feel like you only eat at Halloween. It's like the underrated candy. It's like the under-discussed candy corn. Nobody eats candy corn outside of Halloween, but sweet tarts especially kind of same thing. Nobody's like, man, I got my hunkering for some sweet tarts. Show up Sunday. Drew Brees and Lamar Jackson. We'll explain next.